Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
In the Book of Basketball, subtitled The NBA According to the Sports Guy, Bill Simmons presents almost 700 pages of his opinions regarding the game in which he has immersed himself, much to the delight of the many who follow his musings on ESPN.com. Lots of readers will find themselves agreeing with Simmons on particular matters, such as his contention that Michael Jordan stands alone at the top of the all-time NBA heap. But some of the rest of what the author says may leave readers scratching their heads. Why, for example, does he feel that somebody should make a documentary film about the 1972 Los Angeles Lakers? When we spoke earlier this week, I suggested that he defend that proposition.
The whole point was that, for whatever reason, with baseball, we've romanticized just about everything that ever happened with baseball. You think Brooklyn Dodgers, Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, the 69 World Series, Bill Buckner. It's over and over again. Everybody talks about the history, and every year there's a kajillion baseball books that come out. For whatever reason, with the NBA, there isn't really been any interest in the history at all. And you take something like the 72 Lakers, I just think there's a lot of misperceptions about what happened. You know, I think the perception now is that Wilt was better than Russell, but Russell's teams won more, and Russell's teams won more because they were better. And actually, that's just not true. And I spent a chapter debunking that completely and totally. But, you know, I think the main reason is just because not a lot of people write about basketball.
In the chapter titled The Hall of Fame Pyramid, you write, and I'm quoting now, "I wish we could blow up the Basketball Hall of Fame and start over." Why is that?
I just think the NBA should have its own Hall of Fame. I think the Hall of Fame that we have right now is trying to do too many things. It's about the history of basketball. It's about college basketball. And if you're just trying to figure out which NBA players mattered and which didn't, it becomes really hard if you take the Hall of Fame. The other thing that kills me is that the people aren't weighed by importance. And it's actually a lot like how the Hollywood Walk of Fame works, where you'll be walking along Hollywood Boulevard and you'll see Frank Sinatra, and then you'll see like Burt Convy. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Were they equally stars? No, actually they weren't. And my thing was like, blow up the Hall of Fame, put it in French Lick, Indiana, the home of basketball, turn it into an Egyptian pyramid, and do it by levels. And part of the fun would be, is John Stockton, is he a level 3 or level 4? Is Scottie Pippen a level 2 or is he level 3? And so on and so on. And now you're actually waiting the guys. And then when you go to visit the Hall of Fame, you know, let's say I bring my son in 6 years. He's 8 years old. I'm trying to teach him about the NBA. We go to the Egyptian Pyramid Hall of Fame, and we're going up the levels, and we're going up, and now we're in the Pantheon, and there's Hakeem Olajuwon and Shaq and Michael Jordan and Bird and Magic and Oscar and Jerry. Like, that's what the Hall of Fame should be.
Yeah, but if you're going to bring your son to the Hall of Fame, you'd keep the room where you get to shoot baskets, right? In Springfield, you get to do that.
I would absolutely keep that room, and in fact, that was really the only salvaging grace of the of the Basketball Hall of Fame was shooting baskets. And I think, sadly, people went there to go shoot baskets and not to look at the plaques.
A good deal of the Book of Basketball is devoted to ranking the players whom you consider the greatest ever. And while I was reading your 5-page exploration of the virtues of Dave Cowens, I found myself wondering how many players would have the patience to read about themselves at such length.
That's interesting. You know, I know some of them will. Like, I know Nash a little bit, and I know he'll end up reading the book. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he feels as I passionately say that he didn't deserve the 2006 MVP. But I would hope that somebody like Elgin or Oscar Robertson would appreciate that somebody wrote about all the stuff that they dealt with, which, you know, we always hear about Jack Robinson, and we always hear about Larry Doby and all that stuff, and rightfully so. But I think the basketball players in the late 50s and in the 60s arguably dealt with an even bigger identity issue, because these were guys that were carrying the league and they were being discriminated against in their private lives. In baseball, at least, there was a mix of white players and black players in the 50s and 60s that were carrying the league. In basketball, it was really mostly black guys. And you look back at some of the stuff that happened to them, and it's like, yeah, Oscar Robertson's really bitter right now, and he's known as a crank and a curmudgeon, but he had a real reason to be that way. You know, it wasn't something that he didn't make a decision to become a curmudgeon. He had a lot of stuff happen to him that shaped the kind of person he was.
The celebration of black players notwithstanding, you seem to regard Bill Walton as the embodiment of what you call the secret, even though he calls it the choice. What are you and he talking about? I mean, assuming you want to give this away to people who haven't actually bought the book yet.
No, I don't mind giving away. You know, the main reason I wrote the book was because it bothers me that we use statistics to evaluate which players are better than others in basketball. And in my opinion, it's the sport that statistics, you know, there's definitely a place for them, and it's a nice way for us to know that so-and-so had a good game, whatever. But ultimately, it's you can only play five guys at a time, and the teams that win are the teams that win because they meshed together, and they played with one another, and they sacrificed their stats, and they didn't care about the fact that, oh, he scored 29 points and I scored 23. None of that stuff factors into the teams that actually win. So my, you know, the whole premise of my book is that there's something called The Secret, which I learned from Isaiah Thomas at a tapas pool in Las Vegas. I won't spoil that part. But it's basically about that the secret to basketball is that it's not about basketball, that it's about all the other factors with how you relate to your teammates and how you make guys better, and you don't care about your own stats. And all you care about is how you fit into the team concept and how you make your teammates better. Walton was one of the guys who understood that fundamentally and totally from when he played in high school through UCLA to Portland. They win the title in 1977, and then he gets hurt. So for me, you know, he's just a tragic figure. And we hear about Mickey Mantle. Oh, man, if Mickey's knee hadn't gone in 1951. I've heard that since I was 2 years old. You never hear anyone talk about Bill Walton. So it's frustrating to me. It's like this guy should have been one of the best 10 players ever, and he's had 45,000 foot surgeries. Mm.
Bill, you conclude that the distinction of greatest NBA player belongs to Michael Jordan, and of course a lot of people would agree, but you also say that nobody will ever grab that title from Jordan. What makes you so sure of that?
This is a guy who was homicidally competitive. He had this fundamental need to conquer and to win in everything he did. The rule in the league was not to talk trash to Jordan during the game. Players were instructed, look, don't make eye contact with him. Don't say anything that will get this guy fired up. Hang your head. Pretend you're honored to be with him and just hope he doesn't get mad. Just his force of personality. I tell a story in a book about sitting next to him in 2006 at a hotel room bar, the Four Seasons in Houston. We were in the bar, we were having lunch, and he came and he sat down with Charles Oakley. And we just kind of watched the way his life was for the next 5 hours and the way everyone dealt with him. And it really reminded me of the first scene in The Godfather with Vito Corleone. You know, it was people were in that Luca Brasi mode of, reciting to themselves what they were going to say before they approached The Godfather. He has all these people kowtowing to him and racing around. And then eventually the cards came out and we got to see the real Jordan, not the corporate Jordan, not Mr. Marketability Jordan. We got to see the competitive Jordan, the guy who drops F-bombs and tries to intimidate people and his nonstop chatter. And it kind of all made sense to me. I was like, this is why this guy was the greatest, because even in this stupid little card game in this hotel bar, this guy has to win.
Would it surprise you to learn that some people who've read your book assume that you have serious crushes on a lot of the players in the NBA?
Yeah, I think it's like anything else. I think certain guys resonate with you mm-hmm. a certain way. I mean, for me, you know, Larry Bird, as I write in the prologue, Larry Bird had such a huge impact on me as a basketball fan because I am growing up and learning about basketball. I'm a kid, and I'm watching this guy who is seeing angles that, you know, none of us even knew were there. I'm not ashamed to admit it. If I had to do a top 50 greatest moments of my life, probably 11 of them he was involved in. It's embarrassing.
I just have to wonder what your immediate family thinks about something like
that.
Well,
I didn't say he was in the top 12, but, he's definitely, I think, of like just the happiest moments. And I think that's the great thing about sports is that, you know, you never know when somebody is just going to take you for a ride. And Bird managed to do that over and over again in Boston. And it reached a point by 1987 when, you know, he really started to take on superhero qualities. He was a guy that he just, even down six with 10 seconds left, you just felt like, well, Larry's going to figure this out. You know, it was like John Wayne. And I've never, ever, ever rooted for anybody like that before or since. But I'm sure, you know, Chicago fans are probably listening to that thinking they felt the same way about Jordan. I bet Laker fans feel the same way about Magic and so on and so on. There's certain athletes that just pass through your life that have an impact like that.
Obviously, there's enough basketball in this book to satisfy even the most dedicated NBA fan, but every once in a while, you drop in something else entirely. For example, and I'm quoting now, "I hated English majors in college, and I hate movies that are vehemently defended by English majors now. I'm a guy who majored in English 40-odd years ago. I have to ask, what's that all about?"
Yeah, I have a little English major bias. And I'm somebody that has been writing since I was like five, been writing short stories and everything, and everybody assumed I was going to major in English in college. And I was like, no, I'm going to do poli-sci. I don't want to be in English class with people taking some book and coming up with these convoluted theories for this means this, and when the character did this, I believe that it meant this. And poli-sci, you take an argument, you prove it. You use facts. And I think that really helped me for a sports com. So it's a personal thing. It's not like we couldn't get along.
No, we're doing all
it's
right.
It's not like I wouldn't want to hang out with you. I'm just saying. It's like, you know, so I walked out of No Country for Old Men, which is, and I'm thinking, what just happened the last 25 minutes? That was terrible. That movie fell off a cliff. And then I have to run into my pseudo-intellectual friends who were mad at me that I didn't like the last 25 minutes, and this meant this, and this meant that, and I don't know. I'm a relatively smart guy. Like, if I'm not getting some of this stuff, then maybe the movie didn't do a good job, you know? Or maybe you're reading too much into it. Like, I love Speed. Speed's on, I'm watching it. I like Keanu. The bus can't go under 50. I'm one of those guys. Just, I want to see things blow up, and I don't want to think too much.
It's probably going against your form to ask you for a short answer to a question, but what the heck? What's your prediction for the finals this time around?
Initially, it was San Antonio versus Boston, and then I switched it after seeing an Orlando preseason game and thought San Antonio-Orlando. And now after watching the Celtics again, I do think it's going to be San Antonio-Boston. My goal is to just make as many predictions as possible, and then one of them will be right. And I can say, I picked that. So I try to make 10.
Just make sure somebody saves the tape of the one you got right.
Yeah, I think that's a good strategy. Maybe we should record 5 different predictions, and then you could just run that one.
Bill Simmons, a.k.a. The Sports Guy, is the author of The Book of Basketball, published by ESPN Books. He joined me from KQED in San Francisco. Bill, thank you very much for speaking with me.
My pleasure. It was great.
My conversation with Bill Simmons about his new book, The Book of Basketball, will be featured on this week's program. I'll also be talking with our pro basketball analyst, Kevin Hench, about what conclusions he can draw from the first 2 weeks of the NBA season, and we'll have a story about Sheboygan's NBA team, which you can be forgiven for not knowing about, since they played their one and only NBA season 50 years ago. We'll look back briefly at the achievement of the New York Yankees and discuss whether said achievement constitutes merely a baseball championship or portends a step toward world domination. And we'll have a story about the football team at a college much more well-known for its men's and women's basketball, not to mention academic excellence, Duke. So join us, and remember you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.